Well, it's been a quiet week in Lake Wobegon, Minnesota, my hometown, out on the edge of the prairie. It's been rainy here this last week and a little chilly, but now there's this fine green haze in the trees overhead and the flowers are blooming. Quiet week in Lake Wobegon, as you would see from looking at the front page of the Lake Wobegon Herald Star. You would see that there is a high school band concert on Tuesday called American Salute. And you would see the minutes of a town meeting in which people were asking for variations on easements. And you would see the school lunch menu for this next week. And that would be about all you would see. And there was a picture there of Senator Kay Torvaldsen, the oldest person in town, just returning from Florida. He was down there, spent the winter down there. He was in Fort Lauderdale. He used to be in Tampa, but he left Tampa because he didn't get along with his sister, his younger sister. He's 97, she's 89, and they just don't get along. They just never have, and it gets worse as they get older. Mr. Torvaldsen's daughter, Mary, says, "Why don't you get along with Aunt Biddy?" And he says, "Because she only thinks of herself. That's all she ever has thought about." She asks Biddy the same question. "Oh, he's just all about himself. That's all. He's just always been that way. He was the apple of Mama's eye. She would let him get away with murder. I was the one who had to do the work, and he got to sit around and read. So he's back now. He's back, which is good. Mr. Torvaldsen is very wary of strangers more and more as he gets older, and which made being in Florida rather difficult for him, because they all were. He didn't want to let the gas man come in to read the meter, you know, for fear he was going to be spying on him or something. But paranoia is the luxury of the old. Young people cannot afford it because you need to find people unlike yourself, strangers, you know, to meet and fall in love with. If you only fell in love with people whom you know very well, your children would have tiny pointed heads. And, you know, we need to keep that genetic base as wide as possible. Look at chickens. I mean, what's happened to chickens? There used to be some smart ones, and now the genetic base has narrowed. The chicken, average chicken today, has the brains of a marshmallow. I mean, it's just pathetic. So the upshot is that in a small town like Lake Wobegon, the young people move away, and we're left with the old men. And it's a sad story, but. And now I just had a thought here. I am an old man. Well, okay, never mind. Never mind. We can accept that. He came back, and he's still driving at the age of 97. He's a small man, Mr. Torvaldsen, and he can barely see over the dashboard. He looks in under the steering wheel and over the dashboard, but he drives with tremendous confidence. And so Mary has been worried about him for a long time, also afraid that he would just drive and forget where he is. And so she worked out an arrangement with his urologist, and the urologist implanted a small radio transmitter in Mr. Torvaldsen's groin so that Mary can follow him on her Silver Alert app on her cell phone. And that works pretty well, except that when he scratches himself, which he does a lot, she hears it on the cell phone. It sounds like the roof is falling in. And if anybody uses a microwave anywhere nearby, the old man gets very happy and he wants to dance with you. He was out driving this last week when I was up there, and he ran a car right off the road and didn't even know it. And the car, it was an old Chevy Impala, wound up in the deep ditch. I saw it and I pulled over, and then I saw the two old men get out. They were classmates of mine, the Thurber boys, Donald and Darryl, and they clambered up the slope. I stopped not right there, but I stopped about 50 yards up the road, and they gradually got out. These two boys were the bullies of my school, and they just loved to get in fights with people. There'd be no excuse whatsoever. They would knock you down and fall on you, and you'd roll around in the dirt and the cinders, and they'd just pound on you with their fists. And they got in a fight every day, and now here they are. And they are old men my age, and their hands are like claws. They can hardly close their fingers, and their hips hurt, and they can barely walk, and they have back pains. They're in terrible shape. They made their way up the slope I opened up the car for them, and Darryl got in. Donald got in the back seat. Darryl got in the front seat. He said, "Thank you. Thank you," he said. He said, "Are you from around here?" I said, "Darryl, I've always felt bad about back when we were in school together and that time that you fell asleep in study hall and I pulled your pants off and your underwear came with it and you sat there sleeping and you slept for about half an hour while we painted you with iodine. And I took your pants, and when you woke up, we wrapped a curtain around your waist, and you wore that for the rest of the day. And we called you Darla." He said, "I don't remember that." Well, the reason that he didn't remember it was that it never happened. But, you know, when you have this ability that I have to be able to tell a lie in a believable manner, this is how you wreak vengeance on your old enemies. I said, "No, I felt really bad about how I treated you. It was awfully cruel of me. And that time that I tied your hands and I made you eat worms, earthworms, that was not a nice thing to do. I've always felt bad about it." He said, "Why did you do it?" I knew I had him then. He was thinking about it. I think he would have liked to hit me, but his hands are all messed up. He got out of my car. I could see it was on his mind. It was on his mind. He's going to be thinking about that for the next few months. It's a terrible thing to do, I admit, but it was also enjoyable. So I drove into town and I discovered that Mr. Torvaldsen had driven through town and he'd clipped a pedestrian in his big Buick. This big Buick Electra, it's like a barge going down the street. And he had clipped Carl Krebsbach, who was crossing the street to go into the Chatterbox Cafe. Carl Krebsbach, who has had a lot on his mind the last few weeks. He's found this fungus that's growing in the walls of his house. And then he had a surprising telephone bill. He used his computer for the first time to try to send a facsimile. And he got the wrong number. And instead of sending it to people he was billing in Minneapolis, he sent it to Helsinki, Finland, where it was picked up by an answering machine that nobody was paying attention to. And so every 5 minutes, it's tried to send this fax to the answering machine, and it beeped a few times into the answering machine, and then it stopped, and then 5 minutes later, it did it again. He wasn't keeping track of his app, which does all of this, and so this went on for 7 months. And he got a bill for $8,422. So that was on his mind as well. And also he had found a tick bite, a deer tick bite on his leg, and he was worried about that. And his parents are arguing even more than ever. Florian and Myrtle Krebsbach are arguing. It's the same old argument. She wants to sell the farm and move to a high rise in the city, and Florian is opposed to it, but he can't negotiate for himself, and so he just keeps buying farm implements so that there's all of this machinery around that they would have to get rid of before they sell it. It's like a museum of 19th century agriculture out there, and so they fight over it, and they don't talk to each other anymore. And poor Carl. Carl has been suffering terrible heartburn and carrying Alka-Seltzer around with him, and just been generally miserable. And then Mr. Torvaldsen clips him in the back of his leg with the car going across a crosswalk, and Mr. Torvaldsen stops, and Carl is fed up, and he kicks the fender of the car, and Mr. Torvaldsen gets out and yells at him, and Carl yells at him, and then Mr. Torvaldsen scratches himself, and Mary, sitting in the front seat, just gets into it as well. Finally, the constables, Gary and Leroy, had to come and break it up. It was about a week ago, I think, that Carl, I found this out when I was in town, that Carl was down on the lake, and he was trying out his new rod and reel. He'd paid plenty of money for them, and he was trying it out, standing out at the end of a long dock, and he'd put on a heavy lure on heavy leader, and it was a 30-pound monofilament line, and he just wanted to get the heft of it in his hand. The fishing season doesn't start for another week in Lake Wobegon, actually 2 weeks, but there will be a Mother's Day of fishing, if you have your mother with you, a week from Sunday. So he was trying out his line, and he had no bait on it whatsoever, but he cast, and it went way out, and he snagged on something. It felt like it was a old automobile tire or something, because there was some give there, and then there was a big lurch, and it pulled hard, and it pulled him right into the lake, and he fell off the end of the dock, and it was pulling him. He turned over on his back to float, and he was trying to get this line loosened up a little bit. It was a very heavy line, and it wouldn't break, and he was being towed out into the middle. He had hooked onto a fish by accident, and he didn't know what to do. He started to reel in, and so he drew up close to this fish. He could see just the back fin. It was just surfaced for a moment. It was a huge fish. It seemed to be about 4 feet long, and he kept reeling in until he was alongside the fish, and then he grabbed hold of the fish, and he grabbed hold of its fins, which were sharp and hurt his hands, and right then the fish dove, and it took him down towards the bottom. He took a deep breath, and he held it, and he was trying to figure out how to get that hook out of the fish. He was not willing to give up his rod and reel yet. And then, as they were turning around and wrestling, and he found that his line was wound around him, and he was now tied to this fish going down deep into the lake. And then he remembered the Alka-Seltzer, the bottle of Alka-Seltzer that was in his jacket pocket, and he managed to reach in and open it up, and he thrust a fistful of Alka-Seltzer into the fish's mouth, and the bubbling, the carbonation, made the fish buoyant, and it came back up to the surface and into shallow water, and there he was with this 4-foot-long carp an enormous carp lying there, exhausted. He managed to get his lure out of the carp's jaw, and he gave it a shove, and out into the lake it went. And because there was no photographer around, it never was on the front page of the Lake Wobegon Herald Star. There's only that photograph of this old man that everybody knows already. There was no photographer, and he let the fish go. And so this is a story that only I or Carl Krebsbach could tell you, and I just did. That's the news from Lake Wobegon, where all the women are strong. All the men are good-looking, and all the children are above average.